Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of Pro Basketball Talk, with you as always. And today, we're going to go over a couple areas. We're going to talk about all the changes coming to the All-Star Game, starting in Los Angeles this year, where the captains are going to start picking the players like a playground. And then we're going to get into a preview of the Northwest Division, which is one of the deepest in the league and covers the Thunder, the Blazers, Minnesota, just some fascinating teams. All of it with Dane Carbaugh from NBC Sports. First, though, I wanted to quickly say, if you're a fan of this podcast, please go to iTunes and subscribe there. You can also find us on Stitcher, a great app for organizing your podcast. Either way, subscribe to this podcast. We're going to have great stuff from media members as well as NBA players and coaches and everything all season long. So with that, let's get started. And we are going to welcome in Dane Carbaugh to do this. Dane, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Dane is, of course, with us at NBC Sports, and you can find him. Where can we find you on Twitter and online looking for your stuff?
Just my name, at Dane Carbaugh.
All right, cool. Well, before we get to talking, I mean, we'd set this up a while ago. I wanted to talk with the Northwest Division with you because you follow Portland and know the division. But before that, I think we want to talk about the All-Star Game changes because that's just kind of a big story and really, it breathes a little life into what's been kind of a just, man, last year's event was just dull. The actual All-Star Game itself has just become tedious because nobody plays any defense. There's no energy. There's no real motivation. So they've changed it up this year, and you're still going to pick the players much the same way. Fans will vote. Media will have some say. Coaches will pick the reserves. But essentially all these players go into a pool, and the captains, the highest vote getters, get to select the guys for the pool, which is it brings a little intrigue to what's otherwise been kind of a staid East versus West thing.
Yeah, I really like the idea. And the thing that I'm wondering about is, and I assume that it will be performative in some way, right? The picks should be performative. It should be done on the floor in front of the crowd, right?
I don't know if it's going to be done that way. I'm not sure that it's not just going to be done kind of online. That would be fun. Like, just essentially making it a real pickup game. Just like, all right, you're over here, you're over here. Because of the uniforms and the marketing and all that crap, I don't know if they're going to go that far. Although, that would be fun if they did. But even if they don't, you know, they've got to make a show. If not an actual, like, NBA TV show, do something. It can't just be like, and we announced they picked them behind closed doors. Like, that's no fun. I want this to be a production.
And you do have to have some way, I suppose, for whoever the all-star is that gets picked last to not be the guy who got picked last, you know, sort of. So maybe that's a little embarrassing to get picked last in front of 20,000 people at an all-star game. So yeah, but they need to make it some kind of thing because there's less of a connection between the change for me if it's all of a sudden, oh, these teams are rolled out and they are the blue team or whatever. It's like, okay, that's fine, but I need to have some sort of connection to how that process happened for me to think, oh yeah, this is like a cool thing about how it works now.
Yeah, I agree. I also like the idea. I'm a fan of the idea that they're now playing for some money for charity, which, look, the only ways that adds a little energy to this. This adds a little extra motivation because they're not playing for themselves. The amount of money it would take to get the All-Stars to play hard would be pretty phenomenal because these are all, I mean, you're all talking guys, with the exception of some rookies and stuff, but you're talking about guys on maxes, type max or near max deals generally, who are making a lot of money. And so, you know, you were going to have to put so much money into a pool to make them play hard, it wasn't worth it. Charity adds a little of that, they don't feel too bad if they lose, but they're playing for something beyond themselves a little bit. I like that aspect of it. We'll see, though. They needed to do something to inject some energy into that game, because right now it is just a defenseless mess.
I think the best move would be to have something else that really adds value for them. Like, it doesn't have to be just one thing. I think charity is good from a from a league standpoint, from a PR standpoint, and maybe from a motivational standpoint. But, you know, I think it was Adam Reisinger from ESPN. He said that, you know, have it be something else. Like, if the team that wins this year, if they make the All-Star game next year, they don't have to do any media availability. That would motivate NBA players for sure.
Yes, it would. They for people who don't know, they despise doing it. And frankly, most of the media there isn't really thrilled with it either. But it's part of the dance. It's just kind of a big, awkward zoo. They would certainly be motivated by that. The other change that the league didn't go this far, but I really want them to. If you're going to use this kind of format, go best 24 players. Forget the conference, because right now, the West is ridiculously deep, and you're going to, by the nature of it, guys that we could be talking about today, guys like CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard and stuff, they potentially could not make the All-Star game, not because they're not having a good year, but because the West guards are, you know, Harden and Westbrook and Curry and Thompson, and just, you go down the list in the West and it's ridiculous. And really good players are going to be left off, and that's not to completely denigrate the East, but the West is just deeper right now. So is it a better thing for the league? I think it would be a better thing for the league. I want to see the 24 best players. If you're just going to draw them randomly, let's not go by conference anymore.
Well, it's certainly in the interest of Portland fans to have Damian Lillard miss out on another All-Star game, given how he plays like a bat out of hell every time he misses. but in any case, I think... The problem with that, of course, is that, again, from a league standpoint, that's something they would never do, because it would gerrymander the weight of how the teams were, so that, I mean, at least I think the league's thinking, who knows if they have real metrics on this, I'm sure they do, or I would hope so, but about, okay, well, what kind of interest is there in certain segments of the country if their All-Star doesn't get in? Now, I don't know if that's really the case, to be perfectly honest, because this is a national, global game of some kind of interest. And like we were talking about earlier, the real problems with the All-Star game are really structural. It doesn't have anything to do with who's on the teams. So, but I think that's the only reason they wouldn't do that, is because it would isolate some of the parts, particularly of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it would. I mean, you would certainly be losing guys, I don't know, to use an easy example, Kemba Walker made it last year. I was pushing for Kemba Walker to make that team. I wanted to see him on there. And that said, if you did it this way, I don't know that Kemba makes it, despite his phenomenal season. So, you know, I think they went with six. They went six guards deep last year in the East. That wouldn't happen this year, just because the West is so loaded. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I'm, you know, first year in Los Angeles, they'll do it again in Charlotte. We'll see if they stick with it beyond a couple of years, if they try some different format. But at least they're trying something, because it needed some sort of energy. The actual game itself just seemed like anticlimactic to the weekend. And I can't tell you how many media members, like, just don't go to the game. Like, they come for the weekend, and they're there doing interviews and everything they can, whatever. And then it gets to Sunday afternoon, and that's when they go home, because the actual game itself wasn't interesting. In fact, the most interesting thing about Sunday night's game last year was that DeMarcus Cousins was traded basically during it, and came off the floor like, what? So that was the only, I mean, outside of that, you just don't get anything really interesting outside of these, you know, a few highlights from the Score Fest. So hopefully this adds a little buzz and energy to the event in Los Angeles. And like we said, I would love to see, like you said, if they're not going to do it on the court, they've got to find some sort of public way to handle the picks. It's you know, just have it. Look, let's be honest. It's going to be LeBron James and Kevin Durant. We'll just have them go back and forth on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, let's then move on and talk about a couple guys who are going to be All-Stars. Russell Westbrook, in particular. I think if we're going to start our breakdown of the Northwest Division, it kind of has to start with a team actually not in the Northwest, in the Oklahoma City Thunder, kind of geographically outside the area, but They have moved.
It's a legacy designation.
Yeah, exactly. It's and you know, in a few years they'll move back to Seattle. Don't worry. No, probably not actually, but we'll see what. That's all. The whole Seattle thing is a whole different podcast we can have you on for. Westbrook signing that extension, does that really, do you think it changes the dynamic that much for Paul George?
It's so hard to tell because the only thing we've heard is a denial from his camp about the Los Angeles rumors. Meanwhile, we've heard from, you know, reputable writers, essentially, that they have sources that have said, look, multiple different people have come out about this. Former teammates, friends, you know, private conversations, yada, yada, yada. So it's like, all right, well, this is really being spread around in private. And I only have one sort of reputation for that. And like, you know, like we're talking about, is that like the way that the salary cap has jumped has essentially made the monetary figure for these guys irrelevant. Or like Klay Thompson said, that his shoe deal makes it easier to take a pay cut. Because at some point in time, you lose any sort of tangible understanding, even if you already are a multimillionaire, like you had your first contract, you're going to sign your second, or your second after your rookie. You know, well, what's the difference between 160 million and 200 million? I have no idea. The human brain can't really put a tangible balance between those two things when you're trying to weigh them. So it doesn't matter for a lot of these guys. So it's like, if that's really what it is, and Paul George is going to come up and sign his next contract, it's like, who's going to care? Like he doesn't care anymore like that. And that's of course probably a bigger problem for the league. So I'm not really sure, because of all the information we have so far, you know, combined with the fact that NBA players want to exercise their agency, and the fact that the money is so big that it doesn't matter if you take a max from not your team or the full rights max from your current team anymore. So I don't know.
I think that a lot of the Los Angeles stuff, plenty of people had told me that it was out there, that this was coming directly from people around the George camp. But I think that this was more tied to his concerns about where he would land in a trade. Once Oklahoma City put him on the market, he was just trying to scare some teams off, I think, a little bit. Oklahoma City wisely went all in, because if you're Oklahoma City, and I think, look, there's a handful of teams in here. Houston went all in this year. So I think San Antonio is in this group, obviously Cleveland. If you've got a superstar elite player in his prime, you can't sit around and go, you know, hopefully we can get past the Warriors in 3 years. Like, we'll get to Minnesota in a bit, who kind of went in this summer but still has it, you know, with Towns and Wiggins, everything. Their future still is ahead of them. You can't do that if you're Oklahoma City. You could have lost. If you hadn't, you could potentially have lost Westbrook next summer. Now he's locked in because he said, all right, they're committed, I'm committed. If I believe that they're going to be committed beyond this year, which is the other big question here. They go out and they get Carmelo Anthony, who, look, I like that deal for them. I don't know that it makes them dramatically better. He's, you know, doesn't defend well anymore, obviously, anymore. He's a really good spot-up shooter off the ball. If he's willing to be Olympic Melo, he brings something to the table. He can still create mismatches, and maybe you put him out there with the second unit a little and let him get some buckets. But I'm not sure that he makes them dramatically better as is. That said, you're saying to Westbrook, look, we're all in. The question is, he could opt in next year. He's got $28 million he is owed.
Sure.
Yeah, he could get a 3-year deal where he makes, I don't know, what would, $20 million a year, a little, you know, so he makes more long-term security. But he might just look at the market, which is going to be really tight next year, and say, I'm going to opt in. I'm going to take my $28 million. If he does that, and you've already maxed out Westbrook, and now you obviously have to max out George to keep him. Bobby Marks is estimating it's like a $147 million tax bill could come due on them for a small market. I think that that's the
only
thing.
That's a misnomer when it comes to Oklahoma City. It's a small market in terms of the market value, but NBA owners are, some of them are not afraid of losing money, or at least losing money on the balance sheet that they present. And that doesn't matter for when you're owned by an oil tycoon.
Yeah.
So
And yeah, and by the way, I like the way you phrased that.
Same thing with the Blazers. I mean, the Blazers had the highest tax bill. For decades. I mean, they had the highest payroll because who were they owned by? Paul Allen. It's like, well, they can't get anybody to come to Portland, but they'll pay everybody to stay there. You know.
Yeah, and the other part of that, by the way, and we won't get into all the details. It always bugs me is that we're losing money year over year. We've lost so whatever. They don't factoring in that most of these guys also own the arena or have some tie-in with the arena, so that, you know, they're shifting pocket money from one pocket to another. Franchise valuation doesn't count in that. Like, you know, if you came to a billionaire and said, hey, you're going to lose $3 million a year for 10 years, but then you're going to turn around and sell the team for $500 million more than you bought it for, they're all like, so, like, a massive profit. Okay, I'm good. I'm in. Like, I'll pay it out now. Like, yeah, I will pay out the $30 million now for the $470 million profit I make on the back end. They're all good with that. Like, honestly, if I had the money, I'd be good with that. Like,
and in the meantime, you can write off the losses.
Exactly. So yeah, it's really not that bad for them. We'll see if they're willing to go there, though, and really, I mean, this, again, this is a team that traded James Harden in part because of the tax bill concerns. So we'll see if they're really willing to go there. I thought Westbrook might try to not sign the deal and keep the pressure on, but he does sign, and look, this now is, I think, potentially the second best team in the East. West, I should say. I have them third. I have Houston a little higher now, but I think Oklahoma City has the potential. The GMs, by the way, had them fourth. I think they have the potential to be the second best team because, well, start here. This was 10th in the league defensive team last year. This was good defense and the Russell Westbrook show. Now it's even better defense. Paul George can flat out defend on the wing like nobody. Well, I mean, they had Roberson and stuff, but now they've got bodies that you can kind of start to throw at teams like Golden State. If Carmelo Anthony and Russell Westbrook and Paul George can learn to sacrifice and meld on offense and do the things that, frankly, it usually takes teams. I mean, just looking at Miami with LeBron, what took them a couple years, you know, middle of that second season before they really went, and they put it together and found their system and found everything. I don't know if they have that kind of timeline. If things go weird this year, you know, George could leave. But if they could put it together, I think that that's a team that really is as good as anybody else in the West, not named Golden State.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is that when we're talking about offense and how it works, I mean, okay, the thing that I've sort of been not necessarily parroting, but wondering aloud is, yeah, how do you work in three high usage guys? But the flip side of that, of course, is that, yeah, the Thunder were ninth in pace last season, which is great news because everybody talks about Olympic Melo. That's also Mike D'Antoni Melo playing the four. So he said he's going to play the four. That's going to be Billy Donovan said that Melo's going to play the four, and Melo said, I'm okay with that all of a sudden. to the chagrin of folks in New York. But, you know, what are we talking about in terms of those Knicks teams when Melo was playing the four? Pace. We're talking about Mike D'Antoni pace, top five in the league pace. So I think that really, like, all of that put together still works for this team. So I think that, I think they are already coming together, I think, and showing the things that they've wanted to, we've wanted to see from them in terms of, you know, camaraderie and an ability to find their own spots just in a preseason game. I think it'll work. And, you know, the thing we didn't talk about is sort of the decline of some of the other teams in the West. You know, the Spurs, you know, I think will still struggle to figure out what they're doing. And struggle is a relative term, you know, based off of their, you know, decade plus of winning 60 plus games or whatever stupid thing it is, you know, mixed with, you know, Tony Parker's probably not going to play until December and things like that. So
they take a little step back, but you know, as I was writing and working on their season preview for Thursday and PBT, it's they still, to me, set the bar. Like, they're still not going to beat themselves. Like, the Spurs are going to be the Spurs, and you're still going to have to, like, they're still going to win 55 or 57 games. They still got Kawhi Leonard. Like, you know, they're still going to pull two guys on the floor this year that we don't remember being drafted who turned out to look really good. Like, they're going to do what they always do, but I'm not sure that they're built for the playoffs. certainly to go up against Golden State, but even more so to go up against Houston or Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and mostly what I mean by that is, like, I think when we talk about the West, is that especially with teams who either want to move from that 6-7 spot up into a, you know, top four spot, or move from a just outside the playoff spot into the playoff spot, the tolerances are so small. Yeah. So you need those little changes in your opponents, like the Spurs maybe having, you know, I don't want to call it a decline, but, you know, they just aren't who they were even 3 years ago, you know. So, like, you need that change if you're a team like Oklahoma City who went all in this season and they want to move up to, like you said, like a top three team or a top two team.
Yeah, I think for them this year, I mean, look, we're gonna focus on those big three guys and all this. I really think a key for them is Steven Adams having a big year. I think that they need his toughness and his rebounding and his defense and him to get some buckets inside and him to do some of the dirty work around the paint that hasn't always gotten done. I think that with him in the fold, they are a much more dangerous team.
Uh-huh.
And yep. To me, he's kind of the, if you're talking about a bellwether guy, a guy to watch, is Steven Adams healthy? Is he having a good year? Because a lot of what they want to do on the outside, just they need him as the foundational piece there to kind of build on.
Right. Yeah. Because now you have guys like, I mean, their main backups are going to be what, like Raymond Felton, Patrick Patterson.
Yeah.
Patrick Patterson, of course, is a good player and should be, again, like, unfortunately, very useful necessary for them to be able to,
yes,
to win those games. Because, you know, we saw that last season in terms of, you know, Westbrook struggled a little bit, like when Oladipo had his wrist issues.
Yep.
You know, that was one of the guys who he was, you know, when Westbrook would draw literally all five defenders, it was Oladipo and Roberson really benefiting from those things. So, like, when one of them went out, it was kind of a little bit of an issue for the Thunder. So, good teams, for the most part, are top heavy in the NBA. We know that. They're packed with stars at the top, and they fill out the rest of it. But the Thunder, of course, have a few key guys, and then you have, like, sort of the bottom of it, like Isaiah Cannon and, you know, guys like that who are going to be contributing far less than the guys directly above them, that Roberson level type of player.
Exactly. But I still think, look, this is still a powerhouse of a team that's probably going to be, like, we'll see at the end of the year. It still feels like, you know, I feel like Jeff Gundy here, but it's Golden State and everybody else.
Right.
But when you get to everybody else, they could be there, and that's not a bad spot to be. Like, it's not a bad position to say, hey, I'm, like, you know, second best in the NBA. Maybe they stumble, maybe something happens, and you're well poised to try to take advantage of it. So that is going to be one powerful team that's going to be really impressive. But I think the team everybody's going to watch almost as much in this division is Minnesota, who made big moves this year. I mean, look, we knew Karl Anthony Towns. He's 2 years in the league, and he's already an almost all-NBA player. He was the guy who got the most votes but didn't make all-NBA last year. He's been that good. Andrew Wiggins has been on the rise. And then they went out and got Jimmy Butler this summer, adding a great two-way player on the wing who should help a defense that was down last year. They're going to take a big step forward. How big a step do you think they take?
I mean, it's hard to say, obviously, because you're looking at it like, okay, the West is super tough, and you know, we've been waiting for the development, which we think maybe Wiggins hasn't shown maybe it's just that he's, you know, within the orbit of Karl Anthony Towns, so his development doesn't look as good as Karl Anthony Towns' development, but maybe he hasn't gone as far as some people have hoped. But I think it's going to be pretty significant, if only because they added Jimmy Butler to a roster that, like you said, already had a guy in Karl Anthony Towns who is probably going to be an all-star next year.
I would hope.
I mean, like, so Andrew Wiggins is going to be, I think, better. And the roster they filled out around them, while aging, and a lot of them are just former Bulls from underneath Thibodeau. You know, this is also a team that has a coach that's been there for a little while, so it's not like coming in and trying to get everything to mesh, and it's not like you're adding in terms of how many stars they added, they only added one star, right? That's not like adding two guys to a team, changing the system, and like we're talking about, you know, previous years with the Heat and things like that. So I think it's going to be significant. And if only because I think the bottom part of the Western Conference race, I think will be, while they added stars, it's like, okay, well, that makes, you know, if we're talking about the same division, you know, adding Paul Millsap to Denver, it's like, well, Denver was a really fun team last year that had really significant defensive issues, and they added Paul Millsap. He should be good on both sides of the ball. It's going to be great to see them pass. But it's not like, when I look at those two rosters and the experience they have, I still don't think that's a better team than the Timberwolves.
No.
So it's like, okay, well, then you can start sort of easily ranking out that, you know, that 12-8 in the West, and you're like, okay, well, yeah, I think it's going to be significant for them. I think they're going to make the playoffs.
I think so, too. I will say, I think the big key for them, you know, in addition to just adding Butler, is the defensive end of the floor for them. They were not a terribly good defensive team last year. They need to be a much better defensive team this year. And that starts, you know, with Towns a little bit, but I like the move of Jeff Teague out top. Even though Ricky Rubio was a good defender, Teague can be a little more physical. Plus, now you've got Jimmy Butler in there, who gives you a really good wing defender. And that seemed, I saw them in person for a preseason game this year, that seemed to free up Towns to do a little more shot blocking and be a little more of a force inside. Granted, he was up against the Lakers, and at points he didn't have to defend them, some of their bigs, terribly well. But they were better defensively. It looked like you could see the structure of what they wanted to do there. And if they can get that up to I think they go as far as their defense goes, because I think offensively they're going to be a pretty good team. Not Rockets, Warriors good, but I mean, they're going to be a good team. The question is, can they get enough stops? They seem to be moving towards that. Plus, you just have to think at some point Tom Thibodeau pushes this team to be better defensively.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a big thing for folks to realize. Like, oh, when you get you have a shot blocking center, it's not necessarily about if guys are going to get beat on the wing, because that's what happens, or you push them towards people. But what it allows them to do, like you said, is it allows them to, what do you want to call it, roaming or freelancing or just being more aggressive when it comes to altering the shots of certain guys, is that if you have better defensive players on the wing who are helping out not just on their own guy, but off of their own guy to another wing player's man, that really makes things a lot better. So I think that really should help the Timberwolves. And yeah, but we're talking about a lot of these teams, we just talked about it with the Thunder. It's like, okay, it's really going to be about probably defense, because their offense is going to be very good. And it's the same kind of, you know, Denver's that way, Portland's that way. A lot of the teams in this division actually are that way.
Yeah, that's very true. And by the way, you can also, teams are good about, like Utah did it last year, they can funnel guys to your big man. Try to control the drive and get it to, you know, Gobert is kind of a special case because he's such a good defender, but you try to funnel the guy directly to where it's going and to the guy most able to kind of alter and block and change things. And I think that's what you're getting. That's what you're getting with Towns a little bit. You're getting the ability to, he's starting to figure out where to be a little earlier. I think you're going to see, Wiggins should be a better defender on the wing than he has been. I think we'll see more out of him. I like where Minnesota is headed. Jimmy Butler, it'll be interesting to see how much he's initiating the offense versus Teague and who's setting the picks for him and how. But the other part of this, and they didn't do it a ton in the one preseason game, you know, Taj Gibson was getting a lot of looks because the Lakers were looking at who they could leave and were like, yep, Taj was just getting wide open three after wide open three. But come the regular season, come games that matter, you've got to feed Karl Anthony Towns. That guy has to eat and eat a lot every game.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
So we'll move on then and start talking a little bit about Portland, which is another team. They didn't make a huge move in this offseason. Their offseason move was really the deadline last year when they went and got Jusuf Nurkić. The idea is they have him for the full season. They got out from under the Allen Crabbe contract, although Crabbe played minutes for them last year that they got to find a way to fill. But it's really still like, it's Damian and CJ, and can we get enough stops?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that that's going to be the case. It's really up to two things. Is one is how the it's really how the defensive players on the wing perform with them and who those starters are going to be, whether it's going to be Al-Farouq Aminu at the three or Mo Harkless. That's a real question. It's possible that Evan Turner is the starter, and really how that rotates out will be important for this team's defense, because the four and the five spot, I think, are there's more depth there than they've had in seasons past. And certainly if you're expecting Nurkic to play the entire season, then you have, you know, those minutes already sorted out for you, which wasn't the case, of course, in Portland when they were playing with Mason Plumlee. You know, actually, yeah, the guy who had the fifth most points in the, or minutes on the team was actually Allen Crabbe. Mason Plumlee was a starter, but he had the sixth most minutes on the, played on the team. So so it's going to be interesting to see whether or not how that defense works. Terry Stotts has said that he's not going to make specific changes to his system. He spent a lot of the time over the off season thinking about his system, and that system is, they don't hedge, they did a little show and recover last season at the end. I should take that back, but their system is really basic ice. It's not it's not that involved. So whether that changes simply by having a better shot blocking big man, I don't know. I think the problem with the Blazers pick and roll defense for me, after watching so much film on it year after year, is really just that Damian and CJ just don't get enough pressure over the top. They just don't. A lot of teams shoot a good, mid-range percentage on them for a reason, which is what they want. But I don't know that it works for them, especially when you pick that, sort of when the rest of the defense sort of breaks down. And again, maybe that changes because you don't have guys like Mason Plumlee icing the pick and roll and then literally running into his own man to give up an open lane. So I think it's the other thing for me too, is that, and this is probably just the Oregonian in me, but it's the real worry that Nurkic is not going to be able to play a full season.
That is a legitimate concern. Legitimate.
He's slimmed down. He said he's lost 34, 35 pounds at media day. That's important. He certainly looks a lot thinner. He seems a lot quicker. But again, he's still playing at like 270 or 275. I mean, he's a giant human being, and the Blazers play with some pace and need him to get up and down. And I think that was maybe some strain because he was out of shape last year when he came in, because he was just rotting away on the Denver bench.
Yeah.
Came in, had to play, play minutes with a team. And that's, I think, probably what led to the fracture in his leg. So, I don't know that means he's injury prone, but of course, what do you get when you combine a big man coming to Portland? Is fears about that very thing. So that's going to be the real thing to watch for me on defense, is whether Nurkic can play the whole time and what the those wing players look like.
Any sleeper players we should be watching on this team?
Ugh, probably not. I mean, no, I mean, I think it's hard to put in perspective, because the guys on the team, like you said, the Blazers really didn't make a move this offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, their move, Olshay's gamble essentially was to do what the odds say, and sign Allen Crabbe, max that RFA 2 years or 2 years ago. And, or I should say last year, however you want to count it out. But, And it didn't work out. He thought he was going to find you'd be able to swap him out somewhere. And he ended up, really what he got back in return with the team that signed him in the first place was, money for a trade. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure if that really counts. I mean, Swanigan is the guy. Caleb Swanigan is the guy that everybody is talking about. He had a good summer league. He's had a good preseason showing. We watched him yesterday. He does look good. That's not sort of Blazers fans, which is what they do. What they do every year is they pick one player to hate and they pick one player to love irrationally. So, Thomas Robinson was a player to hate 1 year. Thomas Robinson was a player to love the next year. Myers Leonard is a player to hate for like 3 years. Myers Leonard was the player to hate for one, or sorry, to love for 1 year. It's like it goes back and forth. And so I think Swanigan is definitely going to be that player. I think for the first time in a while, Swanigan might be the player that Blazers fans love irrationally, who's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
He does a lot of things that you can't teach, which is instinct-wise in terms of, rebounding rotations. And he's got some, pretty good post moves for a rookie that I think will be interesting. So if I had to pick one, he'd be the guy.
Yeah. I was going to say, we both saw him in person at Summer League, and the advantage he comes in with is, A, he's built like an NBA player already.
Right.
He comes in with an NBA-ready body. He can bang around a little in there and not get pushed around, you know. They all have to get in a little bit better shape and get a little stronger. It's just part of being a professional, but he comes in more ready for that than most. But I also, like you, I watched that Blazers game last night on, you know, on TV, and I was impressed with, I have fears about energy bigs in Summer League. If you are a high energy big man who can run the floor and rebound and just plays hard in Summer League, you look good.
Like, right.
By the nature of the pickup game style of that, if you're, and we'll see how guys like this pan out longer term, but if you're Ante Zizic or the Laker big man, whose name suddenly escapes me, begins with a Z, Zubac.
Oh, yeah.
If you're that kind of big man, like, they both look pretty mediocre in Summer League, but part of that is just their game isn't going to translate to Summer League. They're just not the up-and-down energy bigs. Roni Turioff was, like, Summer League star back in the day. Like, those kind of big men who are just going to outwork you are great in Summer League, and how they pan out, you know, Kenneth Faried-type guys, you know, how that works in the NBA is a little more up and down. But he looked really good. Again, one preseason game, but he looked really good there. And maybe he can get the minutes during the course of the season. Maybe he can move a little bit that way. I think I have Portland as a playoff team, but I really think that when you get past Minnesota in the West, and the Big Four teams and then Minnesota, I genuinely believe it's going to come down to health. Like, Portland can make it if they're healthy. Denver can make it if they're healthy. And you can go on down the list through Utah and some other teams in there. I think it's the Clippers are in there. You know, how many games do they get out of Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari? I really think that there's a cluster of teams, like you said, between 6 or 7 and 12 that could interchange just based on who can stay healthy. And I think Denver's in that mix. Like, I like Denver barely missed the playoffs last year. They figured out who they were midway through the year with Jokic. And the NBA GMs called the Paul Millsap signing, like, the most underappreciated big signing of the summer. I tend to agree with that. That is a guy who is a perfect fit for what they need defensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of times when I'm going through and just writing stories for us, and I'm thinking about that same thing. I kind of forget that it's like, oh, I'm trying to think of who are all the guys who went west this season? It's this guy. It's somebody else. Oh, it's Millsap. Millsap, that's right. Because we're talking about not just on, everybody likes to focus on, rebounding and the fact that both bigs can pass really opens things up for an offense that's already potent and moves around well, gets up and down the floor. Okay, on defense, we're talking about a team that's young, to be perfectly honest. I mean, they're just young. I mean, even if we're talking about, like, experienced guys in that team constitute, like, Will Barton, you know, who's not exactly, like, an old head, you know, came into the league in 2013. So it's really, I think he's really going to help guide them and anchor them. And what a perfect position to be doing that for them and helping them on defense, right? Because, like we just talking about, say, with Portland is, all right, well, it's like, if your guards aren't that good at defense, that's Denver's problem. Okay, well, you need something from the wing or the power forward spot, because it can't just be, all right, well, let the center handle everything. Because you're right, like, only Utah can do that these days, you know, or Miami. So it's just not going to happen. So he's going to be, like, vitally important. I think people have the right idea about Denver, though, is that, oh, that's an early league pass pick. It's like, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it's a league pass pick. We should all be watching the Nuggets.
You mentioned the guards, but I really think Gary Harris is a guy who could have a breakout year for them, just because, look, he's a 3-and-D guy at the two-guard spot. I wonder if they're going to be able to get an extension done with him before the season starts, because he has real value to them as a guy who can space the floor and give them some wing defense. Before those guys go crashing into the paint. So he's a guy who plays really well off of Jokic, and I think he could play well off Millsap. That's a quality young player right there that they've got that they probably don't want to let go. I don't know if they're going to be able to find a price, but that's the kind of guy they really need in that system if they're going to keep taking steps forward.
Yeah, I think it's Denver. The West is interesting, not just because they added stars, but because of how complex I think that bottom half race is going to be.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. That bottom half of the West race is something that could go, like I said, a lot of different directions. I think health is going to be a big part of it. Like, you know, again, the Clippers are an easy example, but frankly, I'll throw in that other team in the division in there in that race too. It's Utah. Uh-huh. Yes, they lose Gordon Hayward, so obviously this is a step back for them. They are not going to be as good this year. But they did some stuff to the roster, you know, bringing in some veterans. Ricky Rubio at the point. Like, there's things I like there. They're still going to be an elite defensive team. And if other teams in the West suddenly, you know, if Portland and Denver and the Clippers are battling some injuries or battling whatever, and, you know, Blake Griffin punches somebody again, whatever, any of this goes down, I got a feeling Utah's just hanging around going, they could sneak in just because they're going to still get stops. The question there is, like, where are the points going to come from? Because I like Rodney Hood as much as the next guy, but if he's your primary shot creator, it's going to be a rough year.
Right, and I think people in Utah have that reservation anyways, just because we're taking a look at, you know, Rodney Hood and Alec Burks really need to be the guys there.
Yep.
And, you know, Alec Burks, all right, we need him to be healthy. Rodney Hood, we need him to be consistent and not so streaky. So, I mean, again, those guys, I mean, okay, you have Exum back and everything. It's like, or you know, I mean, I know he played the whole season last year, but I mean, like, back in terms of, like, okay, fully, and probably gets more minutes in the rotation just because of the way that the wing and the guard rotations, like, shake out. It's like, man, you lost Gordon Hayward, and you had, you know, trouble scoring with a lot of the same guys in this team and Gordon Hayward anyways. Now, maybe the hope is that because you have a guy who can move the ball around, I mean, Ricky Rubio can score for himself, but he can also move the ball around just by passing, maybe that gives you more lanes. But it's like, again, who is he passing to? It's people that are far less proven. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, I think, maybe, kind of a struggle in Utah this year. And I have less confidence in them in terms of, not necessarily in terms of getting to the playoffs, but just in terms of having confidence in them, say, if I'm a Utah fan, specifically because I think it might be really frustrating to watch them on offense from a, look, dude, 2 days ago on this road trip, you just did this. How come you can't get this done? And what's the problem tonight? And as opposed to, like, oh, well, this just looks like our offense and it's kind of clunky, you know, which is, those are kind of the same, but they're also different.
Exactly. I think there's a couple guys to watch here that make them potentially more dangerous. And that starts with Derek Favors. Like, this offense has always been much better. This team has been much better when Derek Favors is on the court and staying healthy. And of course, that's the question. Is Derek Favors able to stay healthy? Is Derek Favors able to stay on the court? But when he is, that provides some scoring punch, some rebounding up front that really makes them a lot more dangerous. And the other guy to watch is the rookie, Donovan Mitchell, who looked great in summer league and might be one of those steals of the draft type of guys. He is certainly going to get his chance. He was defending really well in summer league, which is what's going to get him on the court for Quinn Snyder. But he's going to get his chances this year. I mean, I don't know that he's in the, you know, Ben Simmons, Lonzo Ball rookie of the year running, but he is a guy who could look like somebody who can make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, again, this team is so interesting from that standpoint, and it's like it's like we were talking about earlier. Is it the tolerances for these things? It's like, oh, if this shakes this way, and yeah, you have this guy who's a rookie, and you have this coming out for not one but two guys that, I mean, Utah, you know, they've been the team of the future for, it feels like, 5 years out west. I mean, like, half a decade, and here they are. And they don't have their main star that they wanted to keep, and you're sort of planning on that. It's almost the same thing as the Celtics a little bit. I mean, the Celtics have those stars on top, but the Celtics, because they don't have any depth anymore, are going to be doing the same thing. They need Marcus Smart. They need Jaylen Brown. They need Jason Tatum. They need all these guys to, like, okay, you have to be good now for us to be good, or to, like, to be, like, an impact in the playoffs. And Utah is almost like, okay, you have to – Burks, Exum, Hood, you need all these guys to be, you have to be good and consistent for us to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah. And there'll be a lot more offense requested out of Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert remains, you know, an all NBA level center who is as good. He was my defensive player of the year vote last year. He certainly deserved to be on anybody's, you know, top two, top three. Because Kawhi and Draymond are really good, but you're talking about an elite defensive, probably the best defensive center in the NBA, bar none right now. DeAndre Jordan's the only other guy, probably in the ballpark. Maybe Whiteside tries to get in there, but he's going to have to do more on offense too, around the rim and rolling and finishing and getting his chances. And he's going to have to show a little more creativity in how he gets points. Rubio will get him the rock at points. He's going to have to finish a little.
Yep, I'm with you, and it's like they need him to, you know, this is what I mean. Do you want to say this is his team now?
I think it is his team.
He's the guy, right?
Who else? Yeah, it's got to be him right now. He's the guy making the money. He's the guy. I guess he's going to be the guy on the billboards outside the arena when you think of like whose picture do you put up? Right. Well, it's got to be Gobert. I'm not sure.
Him and Joe Ingles, baby.
The brilliant Joe Ingles, who he's a guy who might be able to help you. If you're in a deep fantasy league, he's the kind of guy who might be able to help you this year.
Also going to be, again, like surprisingly necessary for this team to have an offense that works.
Exactly. So it's going to be, look, we're going to be watching a lot of this division between Portland and Minnesota and Denver and Oklahoma City. Those are four league pass teams that you're going to want to put on all the time. It's going to be a really interesting division. And that ultimately, by the way, we'll add, is meaningless. I do the previews by division because it's a nice way to break them out. But after we do the previews, like, divisions are meaningless. It is a conference. And these teams that we're talking about battling for a playoff spot will be doing so, you know, like I said, with the Clippers, with a couple teams from other divisions trying to sneak in on the back end too. So it's going to be a really interesting year. But I think, man, Oklahoma City has a shot. As much as anybody's got a shot at the Warriors, and I'm not sure anybody does if they're healthy, if as much as anybody does, they could be right there if everything comes together for them. That's a team I'm just really curious to see how much better they look by Christmas, by the All-Star break, than they do, you know, in November.
Sure. And if anything, they are one of the most interesting teams because there's only two ways for them to pan out, right? Which is essentially top four team, top three team, or tire fire, right?
Yeah.
No, so you're gonna want to watch him no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. And with the, even though he tried to diffuse it a little, I think the where does Paul George go question looms over them all season. Everything Paul George does will be seen as what does he do this offseason? Hey, I heard Paul George texted LeBron James. You know, it's all going to be viewed through the prism of what he's going to do next year, and he's wise to leave his options open. So,
well, he could sign an extension, right?
Who
scorned him? Whose birthday could he sign an extension on?
what is Kevin Pritchard's birthday? I suppose it is possible, but I think he's going to keep his options open. And then at the end of the season, look, if they win, I don't know, 55, 57 games and make the conference finals, probably stays. But if they don't, you know, we'll see. It is going to be one long and interesting season. And Dane, thank you for being here today. And obviously you'll be writing and covering all this and doing some extra Portland stuff this year, which will be fun since you're up there throughout this coming season. We look forward to seeing all of it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, cool. And thank you again, everybody, for listening. Again, go to iTunes, subscribe, comment, let us know what you think, what you want to hear from us on these podcasts. And also, go to Stitcher, a fantastic app for downloading and organizing your podcasts on your phone. Also, of course, NBCSports.com, where you can read the work of Dane and myself, plus find all these podcasts, plus the podcasts and news from around the sports world. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you soon.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at Ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.